Good morning, everyone. You're listening to On Film here at KTEP 88.5 FM. I'm Felipa Solis, your guest host today. I'm a member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association and the executive director of El Paso Pro Musica. I'm sitting in today for Chuck Horak, the regular host of On Film, who is actually on a film assignment and will be back soon. Today, we are talking about the box office blockbusters, the films that are scoring the cha-ching where Hollywood is looking. But are they worthy? What do we think? Our very special guest today is Kyle Alvarado, who is a film aficionado and mentor of film around the community. Welcome, Kyle.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. We're talking about all sorts of things with respect to the summer and what that entails and what we see. Is it quality versus quantity? Is it?
I think it's been kind of a mixed bag this year. I think there's been a ton of sequels that haven't been up to par. I think Finding Dory is probably the rare expectation. But in terms of original properties, they've been few and far between. And I think The Secret Life of Pets, which opened last week to, I think it was the highest animated original property opening of all time.
Absolutely, yes.
What did you think of that movie?
I thought that movie was really, really very, very good. And what I liked about it is when you see sequels, and even with Finding Dory, you see where it seems to be the very same vehicle you always see in a film. So it's kind of a redo, a reboot, that kind of thing. So Finding Dory, we loved the first one, Finding Nemo. But Finding Dory, again, there's that creativity aspect that's kind of missing. That's what I liked about The Secret Life of Pets, is because it wasn't, I feared, a Toy Story kind of a ripoff. It was its own story about this dog in a home who's very upset because he's kind of been displaced by another rescue dog. Mm-hmm. They go on kind of a madcap mission. He causes all sorts of problems, and that's the voice of Louis C.K., so it's great.
Oh,
and he's Max, and he's wonderful. But then all of a sudden, the world of rescue animals and rescuing animals, and those animals have been abused by those bad humans, and they come across a world of pets who decide, we have to go after those humans. Kevin Hart is the voice of kind of an evil bunny, and they're there's an old basset hound that's Dana Carvey that made me feel ancient, because why is Dana Carvey playing like little basset hounds? Mm-hmm. But it was very well done, very creative, and it makes you wonder, well, wait a minute, what is happening when I'm not home? What are they doing?
Yeah.
Are they lighting the house on fire? Are they contemplating it? Are they really happy I'm feeding them filet mignon? Because I'm an animal rescue person, so I came home from that film and went, okay, let's talk. We're going to have a meeting. And they all just kind of looked at me, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now I know what's up your sleeve. If you love animals, you definitely have to take a box of Kleenex with you, because there are some very, very poignant moments where you can't live without your pets.
Yeah. Well, something else that I really enjoyed was it had a lot of sly film references. Like there was that little reference to Some Like It Hot with Nobody's Perfect.
Right.
There was reference to Alien. I think even picked up a reference to the HBO series The Wire, which was,
yeah, they were very underground,
yeah,
references that not everyone, let's say, in not only a new millennium, but children would certainly understand. But I like that they were kind of appealing to adults.
Yeah.
Again, the voice of Dana Carvey, because you're just, oh, it's the church lady. But
and Louis C.K. too.
I mean, Louis C.K. too is amazing.
Which, I don't know if you felt this way, but the earlier chunks of his character, it felt almost as if the filmmakers had him just kind of go on like a kid-friendly stand-up rant.
It kind of did, but I just felt that there was an interesting aspect to the film, a creativity, a uniqueness,
yeah,
a different kind of a screenplay that wasn't, like I mentioned, a ripoff or B, a reboot of just, oh,
yeah,
remember this vehicle? Well, we can make this vehicle,
yeah,
which is more or less what I thought about Ghostbusters. And as a woman who thinks about, as far as works with respect to civil rights and making sure that fellow females have what they need in our universe in 2016, it didn't come off to me as a vehicle of, hey, here's one for womankind. It was just, what would happen if we get four really great actresses and turn Ghostbusters into an all-female thing, and that'll score points.
Yeah.
And I think if there was an actual original vehicle created for actresses like Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig and all of the group, that would be something.
Yeah. And they kind of did with Bridesmaids a few years ago, but I guess just lightning didn't strike twice.
That's right. And Bridesmaids was Women Are Funny, Jerry Lewis. So with that in mind, but it was wonderful. And it was not what you would call the conventional chick flick by any means. It was women dealing with very real problems, real situations, friendships, how they work, how they don't work, what makes them work, relationships all the way around. And Bridesmaids was a fantastic movie. But even though the director did a good job, I think, with Heat, with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy in that kind of give and take and women in a powerful situation, it's still, the bottom line was, I ain't afraid of no ghosts, but...
Like, what else is there?
What else is there? Yeah. What did you think? Because I know that you... I think you... Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I mean, I think if you're able to sort of separate the original Ghostbusters from what this is, it's a perfectly fine, enjoyable movie. It has its own beats. It has its own sense of humor. I think its greatest sin is that it holds Ghostbusters, the original, in such a high regard, and it references it too many times, and there's too many cameos. It doesn't... It's almost too afraid to have its own voice.
That's very well put, because that's what I was looking for. All right. So I'm not going to rip it apart, because I do love the original so much. It was so mind-boggling. It was really comedic genius. I mean, the late, great Harold Ramis was truly an amazing writer, and everything he did in film was just memorable from everything he did. It was. There were too many gratuitous plugs.
Yeah. And this also ties back to Secret Life of Pets in a way, but the amount of sort of corporate synergy between these movies was insane. I mean, the Papa John's pizza plugs and Ghostbusters, and then in Secret Life of Pets, they were promoting The Tonight Show, and they were even promoting their upcoming slate with that movie Sing. Mm-hmm. And for something like that, I mean, product placement is part of movies. It's always been that way, but... This just felt way, 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 way too much.
When you can count them.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look, there's the water bottle from. And when you can actually do that, it becomes too much. What did you like about the film?
Ghostbusters? Or
yes, Ghostbusters.
I enjoyed Kate McKinnon's performance probably the most. She
Interesting.
Was so dorky and excited. I mean, what was my favorite thing was seeing these four characters get excited about ghosts and seeing them kind of geek out. It was really adorable and endearing. It was something that was missing from the original film, because I think they seemed a little more jaded, a little more...
They're more cynical. Yeah. I mean, you've got Bill Murray, and I mean, come on, he's got a lot on his agenda.
Yeah.
Always has.
And I appreciate the visual effects, but I think the original, I think with the use of makeup and practical effects, holds up better than what we were given in this movie. What did you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'll never forget watching it for the very first time, and we're not going to age myself right now, but the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man was the single greatest thing I had seen in a film at that point when that film came out. And it remains today
it's a set piece. Yeah.
I want one for my house. It's just, you know, you want the blow up Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and just if he could walk, so much the better.
Yeah.
But there were so many little nuances like that. You had people like Rick Moranis, who was not, you know, the cute guy in the room. He was the geeky guy in the room, but you couldn't help but just like him, because he was just such a screwball. And then you had the presence of Sigourney Weaver, who was kind of the glamour of the film, if you will.
Yeah.
And that Bill Murray would be the leading man was most funny, but it was believable. Then, of course, I always think of ProMusica because of the reference in the original film to Zool, who is, Zool Bailey is our artistic director of El Paso ProMusica, and we always give him a hard time that maybe you are indeed a ghost, but a powerful one at that. But it was missing something.
Yeah.
There was something. When the CGI came out, it wasn't funny anymore.
Yeah, it wasn't funny, and it wasn't even, I don't think it was kind of believable. You had actors in costume and makeup and practical effects, but in post-production, they gussied them up way too much with CG. There was too many particle effects. There's so much that it sort of masked the performers, and I couldn't really enjoy what I was seeing. Like, when you compare the first ghost, which was the woman in that mansion, mm-hmm. to the librarian ghost, two different things, two different experiences, two different memories of interacting with that character.
That's very true. And I think it missed the mark. Yeah. I think it probably missed the mark at the box office. And it's interesting because in the last 2 weeks, I loved The Secret Life of Pets. Mm-hmm. And then there was Ghostbusters. But I felt that the movie of the last 2 weeks was The Infiltrator with, I think, one of the greatest actors in this generation, Bryan Cranston. And yes, we can say Bryan Cranston at the same time.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It's just, he's so brilliant. And I loved the fact that as an undercover cop, it was very much, well, I mean, think about it. He was the kind of the family man who gets into a life of drugs. Hello.
It's kind of like the opposite of Breaking Bad.
It was the opposite of Breaking Bad, but there was so many similarities at the beginning that I went, oh, where are we going? Where are we going with this? But I really think that not since Donnie Brasco has there been an interesting film with an undercover situation where he adjusts to his family, then he adjusts to his world.
Yeah. So I wanted to see that movie, but I ended up locking myself up this weekend because I became addicted to Netflix's Stranger Things.
Oh.
Yeah. It stars Winona Ryder and Matthew Modine. And it's basically, in a lot of ways, the Ghostbusters was a love letter to Ghostbusters. This is a love mm-hmm. letter to Stephen King and Steven Spielberg from, you know, the 80s. And it's interesting. I think it has a little more on its mind in terms of wanting to create a stylistic show. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has some substance, but it's kind of lacking on some. But for 8 episodes, about an hour each, it's a fun way to sort of lock yourself up for a couple of days and binge watch it.
That sounds fantastic. As a matter of fact, we were talking about Top Gun recently at the mm-hmm. Alamo Draft House. And do you know that Matthew Modine was supposed to, he was supposed to sign on in the Tom Cruise part, but he didn't agree with it politically. So he backed off. It would have been interesting to see how that would have changed his career. But he was a very good actor. And at that time in the late 80s, early 90s, he had a lot of promise to really kind of be that leading man that kind of didn't happen.
Yeah, he's been sort of relegated to supporting roles, you know, basically since. But it's sort of nice to see him come back in the show. He's a little underused, but mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a fan of Winona Ryder, mm-hmm. watch it. It's great. The other thing is that if you forgot about Winona Ryder, you sort of see her performance, and much of her performance is her typically by herself, or she's interacting with inanimate objects, and you sort of realize that she's actually kind of a good actress.
She's a very good actress. She has a great deal of talent. And also coming up on Netflix, I believe by the end of the month, is a film called Tallulah, which is the story of the great actress Tallulah Bankhead, who mm-hmm. had a host of issues in and of herself. And Ellen Page is going to play Tallulah Bankhead.
Oh, wow.
It was just Lifeboat was just on. That was a great movie that she did. And that was an old Alfred Hitchcock film that was on Turner Classic Films, Turner Classic Movies the other evening. And so it was very, very interesting what Netflix is doing and how it's kind of changing our industry. So
yeah, I feel in a way they're sort of out HBOing HBO in terms of content creation.
Absolutely. I think that they are out HBOing HBO. That's very well put. Netflix has some incredible things. You've been listening to On Film. Thank you so much for joining us today. Our very special guest, Kyle Alvarado, who is a wonderful actual film historian and is very astute as to what's going on in films today, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. That's how I like to look at it. Almost like James Bond.
Nice.
Sean Connery, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I'm Felipa Solis, sitting in for Chuck Horak. He is your host of On Film. He'll be back soon, following his film assignment. Have a great day.